Hi everyone. In this episode, I talk to Jackie, who works at an organization called Poder. I don't want to spoil too much because Jackie gives a much better explanation of what she does, so I will let you all listen. As for Jackie, I will let her introduce herself now.
My name is Jacqueline Gutierrez, and I was born here in Ohlone Lands, San Francisco. Really, my family's roots are in Mexico City, and kind of my upbringing is a little bit funny to explain, but I was the first person in my family born here. And shortly after that, we returned to Mexico, and then we came back to San Francisco. So sometimes I say I like was raised in Mexico. Sometimes I say I was raised here, and those both things are true. I was born here. A little bit of my childhood was in Mexico, but most of my upbringing has really been San Francisco. And Spanish was my first language. We speak Spanish in my home, and that's kind of how I sometimes navigate a lot of my process, my thoughts, my creativity sometimes is in between the two. And I feel most comfortable acknowledging kind of the duality and the kind of hybridness of that part of my identity. As for my work with Poder, Poder has been a big part of my life for going on maybe a little over 8 years. I started off as a volunteer, and I was pulled in through a good friend in high school who was in the Urban Campesinas program. So it's like maybe high school, right out of high school. And he was from the mission. He had been working with Poder for a couple of years, and he's just wanted to bring his friends, you know, along. And I was, at that time, I was really interested in like arts and arts programming, so I didn't really make time for it. But eventually started coming around to some meetings and kind of I really got pulled in when we started like doing, when we started doing cooking workshops with harvest from a garden that we steward in the mission, the secret garden. And I thought that was super cool. They were bilingual, and I was like, oh, this is stuff that I can like bring my family to. So it felt really safe. It felt very comfortable and like the perfect kind of moment to find an activity or like a safe space. And I really never left. So in this time we were organizing to reclaim a site over in the Excelsior for farm space. And now that, you know, we know that as Hummingbird Farm. This is like almost 8 years down the line. So I was a volunteer for about 2-3 years, and then I came on board as the youth programs organizer. So a lot of the like amazing programming that I went through, trainings, workshops, learnings, I'm able to apply directly to our youth program now for high school students.
Based on my research, Poder is an organization that works with Latino immigrant families, as well as other low-income communities of color, to build community-rooted solutions around needs such as access to affordable housing, parks, youth rights, and social economic equity, and environmental justice. Is there anything that I'm leaving out or anything you want to expand on?
I would say that feels correct. Really, I see our work as like this intersection of environmental justice. And what I mean by that is also incorporating what organizing and what justice and what healthy communities look like through gentrification, and what our role is in keeping our families here, right? So to me, this really looks like community-rooted solutions led by people first impacted by some of these issues, like evictions, like no access to green spaces. So in order to thrive, we really need healthy homes, green spaces to reconnect to the earth and our ancestral traditions. And all of that really makes for strong communities, right? So I think environmental justice, climate justice often kind of takes this like singular lens that isn't rooted in culture and traditions. And that's not how we practice our work. It's quite the opposite, actually. So, that's how I would encompass it.
Nice. And I know you talked about the different communities that you serve. I know A large part of your community is Latino, but you also serve other communities such as Chinese immigrants. And I was wondering more about kind of the multilingual aspects of your community.
Right. And I know there's a question down the line around our Common Roots program, and maybe this is like a good time to share some of that. The main neighborhoods that we work in are Mission and Excelsior districts. That doesn't mean it's the only two spaces we work in or are connected to, mainly because we are a member-based organization, a member-led organization, in which through gentrification, through different circumstances, our membership doesn't only live, exist, work, thrive in these two neighborhoods, right? We have folks out in Tenderloin, we have folks out in Bayview, Viz Valley. So kind of looking at it as Mission and Excelsior being our main kind of homes, but really this ecosystem of like larger communities is also home because that's where our membership is. And when we look at a place like the Mission that has been historically Latinx with a changing demographic, that also impacts our work. In the Excelsior has slightly different history in terms of demographics. It really is like one of the most diverse neighborhoods with a bunch of Latinx folks, Chinese folks, Black folks, Filipino folks. And I think that encompasses kind of the way that we're able to organize and have community wins, right? So one element in that's really like incredible and special about our work in the Excelsior is through our involvement with Communities United for Health and Justice, CUHJ, that brings together Poder, Filipino Community Center, and Coleman Advocates. That's really where that intersection of cultures, identities, language comes across. And we see that through our housing action team that is, you know, like trilingual. Things are translated into Tagalog, Cantonese, English, Spanish, and like really there's a beauty in that strength, right? Because often folks aren't finding spaces and in which their voices are valued, let alone two or three other folks' voices, right? And while, you know, multiple interpretation requires a level of understanding and patience because things take a little bit longer. There's also a really deep value in knowing that like I'm committed to them because they're committed to me and I'm committed to hearing what they have to say because they're committed to hearing what I have to say. So that strength in diversity is really essential in our community wins, especially in such a diverse neighborhood. And I did want to share a little bit too about our Common Roots Youth Program, where really this program was born out of kind of bringing together the two at the time. This program is like 20 years deep. At the time, bringing together like the two largest communities of immigrants, Latinx and Chinese communities or Chinese folks. And really bringing our struggles, but also our resilience together. And it's always been rooted in youth organizing and youth leadership, right? So through this program, that's very rooted in like cultural traditions. And it's also rooted in like, you know, how are youth playing a role in seeing their communities thrive? And the reason Excelsior is so important in this is because really this is where our communities were coming together the most. And that's where we've seen kind of this youth power really take a role, right? So the youth, Common Roots Youth Program was instrumental in organizing for Hummingbird Farm, for the Upper Yard Affordable Housing that's actually going to have its groundbreaking about 7-8 years later down the line. Sisterhood Gardens. So all these like community sites and projects, this group of Chinese and Latinx youth have really made that happen. So that's where that like deep learning, solidarity kind of comes together through that.
Yeah, that's super awesome to hear. And I know you mentioned a lot of different languages that many people in your community speak. And in general, how would you say the multilingual aspects of your community impact the nature of services you provide? And how do you deliver those services based on multilingual speakers?
Right. I think something I also haven't mentioned is, and I know this came up while I looked at some of the other questions, is that I think Latinidad is complex, complicated, and fluid. And I don't necessarily think it's an identity that captures the way that a lot of people want to be represented. And a lot of people really want to be represented by this kind of, you know, big umbrella of Latinidad. And the reality is that Latino, Latina, Latinx does not actually imply or represent racial identity. And that's a little bit, I think these conversations are being had and it's really important. So when we think about that dynamic and we think about, for example, I'll share one of our like most incredible youth. I've had such like, you know, really the privilege of working with her or being in space with her for the last like 3 years, three going on four. Ethnically she is Chinese, but she identifies as like Mexican because she was raised in Mexico. So she is like trilingual. She helps me out so much with like doing so much in terms of like properly communicating, kind of interpreting a lot of messages that we might need to have, like whether we're doing outreach on the street or we're like holding down agendas together. And she, you know, when this program Common Roots, she's like, this is made for me. And I'm like, this is it in like the most organic way, right? She considers herself Latina. She was raised in Mexico, yet her ancestry is from China. So kind of bringing together these different elements really breaks that mold of what Latinidad is. And I think it's so important to capture that and to really kind of break away from that like box of what Latino is, what Latina, you know, is or looks like or sounds like, right? Since we're focusing on language. Kind of went on a on a rant. Not sure if I answered that properly.
Yeah, you definitely did. And I think that is definitely a big part, is that language doesn't always define race and different parts, different labels of people. But how would you say that maybe language defines people in other ways of the communities you serve, if there are any other ways?
Yeah. One other thing I didn't mention is also within kind of this big umbrella of Latinidad, and breaking away from that, is our Indigenous membership who identify as Indigenous, yet in kind of the eyes of the census, are considered Latinos, right? Latinx. And I think that has been such a big learning curve for me in being in space, in learning with our Indigenous membership, a lot of them being Mayan from Yucatan. I think when I really started kind of coming into this recognition of like, not all Latinx folks speak Spanish. And that to me was so important in like recognizing kind of like what the bigger we is and what the challenges we have to start addressing are in terms of like properly representing and working with communities that are most impacted, right? So something that is really significant in like talking about language and advocacy and organizing is that often like we consider it a success if kind of like these main languages are represented, like Spanish, Tagalog. Yet there's folks who speak their Indigenous language and may not read or write in Spanish, but that's what they're assigned to, right? And I think that's super important to recognize. I also really had the privilege when I was, I think I was maybe 19, 20 in my first couple of years at City College. I was supporting with an adult education class through a service learning project. I ended up staying probably like for 2 years because I love the experience so much. But one of the support being offered by the teacher that I was working closely with was a literacy class. And I didn't know what that meant. Because what I first signed up for was like the supporting the English as a second language students, the adult ESL classes. But she asked me to support kind of more intentionally in this other class she had. And I was like, yeah, sure. I have the time. It was like 7, 8 in the morning. I was like, sure. And it was a literacy class. And I didn't quite understand what that meant. Quickly, I learned that it was a lot of Indigenous folks who didn't know how to read or write in Spanish. So they couldn't actually access the ESL classes because they weren't looking to learn English right away. They wanted to learn Spanish first to kind of like help them establish themselves and then learn English, right? So when we think of success and like English kind of being this language of success, that like blew my mind because I was just like, I just wasn't thinking about this. So that was a really, really, really eye-opening and incredible experience to work in this class. And to be honest, it wasn't just Indigenous folks that were learning Spanish language to then be eligible for the ESL classes. It was a lot of folks who spoke English and Spanish who had never had access to going to school. So this is like, you know, maybe this was 10 years ago, but contemporary, right? Like adults who grew up working in fields with their parents who didn't have access to going to school. So they were, you know, as adults returning places like incredible, you know, to learn literacy and letters and like counting and numbers and math. And I was just so like, you know, it was humbling, but at the same time, it was a big wake up call to acknowledge like all of the funding that goes elsewhere and that doesn't go to, you know, communities that need it the most, or, you know, intentionally like racist policies that make people have experiences like this. So yeah, I think that was kind of in terms of education and like my life as an educator, like that was really one of the biggest, maybe, yeah, we can call it a wake up call.
Yeah, definitely. I think even myself, I wasn't really made aware of this issue until more recently, and I don't even think I understand the full impact. So it is a really important thing to keep in consideration when dealing with a lot of communities that are diverse, and especially with a lot of immigrants.
And this concludes this part of the podcast. Thank you so much, everyone, for watching. And if you would like to listen to part 2, it will be after this episode. Thank you so much, and I hope everyone has a wonderful day.